We're talking with Yvonne Smith about her new book, Coronado. And in this book, she has very detailed descriptions that are sort of wrenched out of about a dozen witnesses who were on Coronado on this fateful weekend, including these two ladies, Alice and Lacey, who were roommates, who both independently told the same sort of a story afterward. And under hypnosis, this one lady, Alice, was describing what had happened to her, and she's telling Yvonne, "He scared me. He was next to the bed." And Yvonne asked, "Who's he?" "He has long fingers. He tried to touch me. Long, skinny fingers. He's looking at me. I jumped out of bed. I can't hide, though." And Yvonne asks, "Are you able to see his face?" And Alice says, whispering, "He's a bug. He looks like a big bug." When we come back, we jump into specific descriptions given by these witnesses, why this is such a chilling story. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Yvonne Smith, in your book, Coronado, you detail the stories as told by about a dozen of your Cero members who were there on the island during these events. And there are remarkable similarities in the stories, even though they were you had these sessions independently, individually. Tell us the story. Tell us the basic tale as told by Alice and Lacey and Mike about what happened to them. And give us the chilling details.
Well, it was the six of them, as I mentioned before, were staying in one of the other historic hotels on the island, but they were all going to be attending the conference there at the Village Inn. They were on the third floor, and on the Friday night, Mike remembers a bright light coming into the room, and, you know, your mind tells you, it wants to make sense of what you're experiencing or sensing, and he kept thinking, oh, it's a plane coming in to the San Diego airport. But later on he realized, well, no, we're pointing the wrong way, and we wouldn't ever see planes coming in from Coronado, from where we were, coming into the San Diego airport. So he knew that later on he knew that didn't make any sense to him. But he realized that, and this is over, you know, a period of time of, you know, he remembers a bright light coming in. He drew a sketch later on of what he remembered in the room. It was during the course of hypnosis, and then he remembers, saw the bright light. Next thing he remembers, he wakes up going to the bathroom, comes back to bed, and in the morning he saw the blood on his pillow. And for many, many years he thought, and he told Alice, I must have hit my chin on the sink. But that didn't make any sense to Alice. Later on, she thought about it, and then it wasn't until years later when Mike said, you know, that didn't make any sense, because the blood, you know, wasn't coming from his chin. It was actually coming from his ear. And he did go to the doctor about that. But that same night, it's so involved, George. It's so hard to explain, you know, because I know we don't have, you know, a lot of time, but it's so difficult to explain the details. But,
well, let me pick a couple of them. Dealing with Mike, he's a registered nurse. He has degrees, I guess, a major in psychology, anthropology. He's an educated guy. Turns out, I guess, he's had a lifetime of experiences, including one in the Navy.
Yes.
Which sounds, when he had a bright light, and it sounds very similar to what happened on Coronado, but you said he had this blood on his pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Later, what was kind of chilling is what you tell in the story is that in the book is that he had this sort of irrational fear of some silver instruments or something, and he had a doctor who actually looked at his ear and told him something that kind of got his attention. Do you remember what that was?
Well, I remember him telling me after he saw the doctor, and he said, the doctor said I have to stop punching holes in my ear. And he said he almost fell off the chair, because he actually had, the doctor found a puncture mark in his ear. And we even have the report of what the doctor wrote down about it. So the blood had come from his ear. And then that same night, that's when Lacey, she saw Alice being taken. She remembers seeing the beings come in, but she, her impression was that she, that they passed right by her because they were, I showed the picture in the book, they were sleeping in twin beds in the room, and she saw the beings walking right past her to get to Alice. And as you mentioned right after the break, that Alice was describing what was next to her in the room.
But both of them basically remember these beings of being in the room with them. I think Lacey is the one who said they had a really bad smell, right? Which I don't remember ever hearing that in an abduction case. Do you?
Well, yes. Over the years, people often have described them with I remember Whitley Strieber had said he smelled them. That they smell like, just like when people, you know, really back where in the 60s, I remember accounts of people seeing UFOs, having close encounters with them, that they smell the sulfur,
right?
Rotten eggs and sulfur. Well, some people, abductees, have described that smell in the room.
Alice had her own, you described Mike having this blood out of coming and a puncture in his ear. There were some physical effects on Alice. Do you remember what those were?
Well, she came away with a scoop in her shin. And for a long time, you know, she had no idea that there was actually something right under the skin. And it wasn't until Roger Lear, bless his soul, he asked her, if she wanted an X-ray. And during the course of the X-ray, they found that there was something there. And then she decided to have it surgically removed.
What did the analysis show?
Well, all the details. I mean, my gosh, I got to read back my own book of all the details.
Well, was it anomalous? Is it anomalous? I guess is the question.
Yes, I mean it has the same properties as now. He did 17 surgeries by the time he passed away, and it contained. Well, back in the 90s, there was no such thing as nanotechnology, or we weren't talking about it then, like we're talking about it now. But it did contain the nano tubes or nanotechnology in her implant, and so she just felt and she knew that she came away with that object in her leg after spending the weekend in Coronado. And I have the pictures in there of I've got Roger Lear's his analysis in here of sending it to one of the labs, and then I show the X-ray where it shows where the object was, and of course then I have the magnification of it as well. Wow.
I'll tell you what, let's talk about where they were taken, because the story you put together after hearing from all of these abductees gives you a pretty good idea, and they all describe sort of the same place that they're taken. Describe what that place is and what happens to them, because remarkably, at least a couple of them remember seeing the others there at the same time, right?
Well, yes. I mean, this is when the story just started unfolding, the whole experience. And they do remember, you know, many people, hopefully they're all going to come forward and want to grant interviews because it's such an important case. But they're taken into a very large craft. I mean, it was described by one person as the largest he had ever seen or ever been inside of, that he is a lifelong abductee. And that was John, also from Coronado. But when they were describing this large craft, I got the impression after working with all of them that they obviously planned this whole abduction, this whole mass abduction, because it seemed that their operation was, I mean, well, very well planned, with all these people being taken aboard. They see each other in the examination rooms. There's a very large room with several examination tables on there, in that room. And Melinda, who will talk about her experience, saw John in that huge room, and he also saw her. And they both talked about it during their regression.
Independently of each other.
Independently, yes, because when I work with people in regression, they have, it's all private, private sessions. So all of this started unfolding. They saw, Melinda also saw Alice, and then we have another, Sam in the, Sam and Gary, who were rooming together, saw each other in the examination room. So it, as I mentioned before, it is extremely complicated. I opened up the page here to Alice's, in simpler terms of her analysis, very quickly. And this was back in the early 90s when this was removed. But the object was very hard. X-rays were passed through it, both as an intact object and in powder form. No regular pattern of X-ray scattering peaks were observed, indicating that the object has a random and non-crystalline arrangement of atoms. This type of structure is often termed amorphous or glassy. And those people who are interested in purchasing the book and reading, they'll see more detail of the magnification of this, of her object, and the surgery and so forth. But, this was, as I mentioned before, this was in the early 90s when this was removed. And when we bring Jesse on, he'll talk about his object that was also removed, I believe, in the late 80s.
Let's talk about the reasons, Yvonne. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the big question. Why are they doing this? And as you know, we'll hear from Jesse about their interest in reproduction. Alien hybrids. I mean, it gets pretty exotic. You have to wonder why such advanced beings, wherever they're from, whether it's another planet or some other reality or something, why they would need our specimens. Why couldn't they just mass produce it? It seems like they would be as advanced in biology as they are in physics and engineering.
Right. I mean, and we're thinking in our terms.
Right.
Why are they so advanced, and why can't they just, well, obviously, I think if they could do it, they probably could do it, but they obviously need something from us. They need us on board. They need to take our DNA and whatever else they want, our blood, and they are producing these hybrid beings. I mean, this has been, everybody goes through this. They have ova taken, they have sperm taken. It is a huge operation. And they can't really, or maybe they can, but they're not mass-producing emotion. When people are shown their babies, and then they're shown periodically different stages of growth with these hybrid children, they tell them, you have to love your child. You have to, in other words, you have to bond with this child for the child to survive and to thrive. It's like they're incapable of showing this emotion. But they need us for that. In Chosen, in my first book, John, who is also in Coronado, he describes, in detail of seeing his son, his child, during different stages, and how he was, made to interact with them. And he kept saying, "What am I going to show him that these beings can't?" But obviously,
it's something. I think one of the, I can't remember which one it was, maybe it was Jesse, who in the book says something about having an exchange with one of these beings in which they said thank you.
Yes, and it's very, very, very emotional. I've had that happen to several people, thanking them for for giving them their children.
Thanks for your donation.
For your donation, yes. And, it's heartbreaking because also in my book, Chosen, I talk about a woman who had three Earth children down here, and then they showed her her baby up there in the craft, and she thought she could bring it home. And it was heart-wrenching to hear her during her session, and I reviewed her tapes, and it was heartbreaking because she couldn't understand why they wouldn't let her bring her own baby back here.
Yvonne, do you have any cases where people are actually missing when they're abducted? Other people come into the room and say, "Oh, wonder where Bob went," or family members. Or did that happen in this case in Coronado, where anybody else that you work with from Cerro was left and not taken, who went looking for the rest of them and found they were gone?
Well, yeah, I've got many cases that happens all the time where people are physically missing. And this is what happened when Lacey was describing what happened in their room, and she became very upset when she looked over and she said, Alice is gone. And this has happened to many people, couples. This happened to Jack and his wife, he was on the same floor there with Lacey and Alice further down the hallway. And what happened with them, married couple, he looked over and he realized that they were taking his wife. And he saw her, being taken in the beam of light. And
that would really be traumatic for a husband to see the wife being taken and there's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do. There's another case that, very recently, where it was roommates, and she was, the woman roommate was sleeping on the couch, and her roommate was standing there, or sitting on the other chair, but they were in the living room, and he actually saw her levitating off the couch. And then when she woke up, usually they don't like you to wake up during this whole process, but she woke up and then she felt herself being levitated, and then she came down on the couch, and he was so traumatized over that. And I questioned him about it, and he described what he saw. So you can imagine, being an eyewitness to that, but that happens all the time.
So you have multiple witnesses who report this happening, independently reporting that it happening. You have at least some physical evidence, physical manifestations of injuries to some of the people involved. I mean, in some estimations, that would constitute evidence. I suspect that some people would still be willing to cross it off. Yvonne, I'm not sure if we're going to have chance for the listeners to ask questions of you later. So when we come back, I'll open up the phone lines for a couple of minutes, and then I want to ask you the Bill Clinton question as well. So stay with us, everyone. Yvonne Smith is my guest, talking about her new book, Coronado, The President, the Secret Service, and Alien Abductions. We haven't yet touched on one of the spookiest stories is a lady named Dawn, the daughter of a famous rock star who saw something called spider people. The descriptions of aliens in these encounters are pretty across the board, pretty similar, but it's hard to tell what they really do look like. If they can create screen memories, if they can sort of make themselves look like a dead relative, do we really know what they look like? We'll get into that, open up the phone lines, and we'll be joined by two abductees a little bit later at the top of the hour. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Yvonne, I need to ask the Bill Clinton question. I suppose if these visitors, wherever they're from, can do all of the things that various witnesses have described, and there's not much we can do to stop them, that was a golden opportunity to go ahead and snatch the President of the United States during the Coronado event. Did they?
Very, very possible, George. Very possible. I mean, the question is, was this all planned? I may be stepping into some uncomfortable territory here, but, was the president aware of what was going to happen on the island? Was his entourage, the Secret Service, were they aware of it? It was almost as if, I first thought, boy, these aliens are, you know, they're really thumbing their nose at the president and his entourage, because they almost as if they're saying, look what we can do. Look, with all your security, look what we still can do. So that's the question, George. I mean, was this orchestrated? Was this all planned out for the president to know about these mass abductions?
You know, as you deal with your clients, your I'm reluctant to call them patients, but your customers, they're your
my clients,
the people you counsel.
Right.
You know, you learn to pick up on signs that they show you as they talk about things that happened to them, and you pick up little clues.
Yes.
When you look at President Clinton, who even as recently as a few weeks ago is on television talking about aliens, and it was one of the first things he did as president, is trying to get to the bottom of Area 51 and finding out about UFOs. Is that telltale to you?
Well, it's very, this was timely. You probably saw it, George. It was April 2nd when Bill Clinton appeared on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. And this was right before the release of Coronado, my book. And, of course, the whole conversation was about UFOs. And I don't know, you may know about this. I think you did speak to Ben Hansen about his, you know, the host of Fact or Fake Paranormal
Yes.
Files.
Yes.
He mentioned in his video, because I watched his video about how he did an analysis on the body language of Bill Clinton during that interview with Jimmy Kimmel, which is very interesting. And I think he mentioned that he called you or asked you a question.
He did.
About this. Okay. And I thought, well, here, okay, more synchronicity. I'm going to be on George's show. And here he mentions you. But it was interesting because as I was watching the video again of Bill Clinton's interview, Ben Hansen mentioned, okay, he displayed some apprehension, you know, the tension in his jaw. He displayed stress. He did have guarded behavior. And as he was pointing things out, I thought, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Clinton sounded and acted restrained from speaking too much on the topic. So, you know, how much does he know about the topic? He did say that, you know, I don't remember the part that Jimmy asked him, you know, if you found out about this, that aliens exist, would you tell us all? And, you know, Bill Clinton says, well, yes, you know, he said, I'll tell you. But yet Ben Hansen seemed to feel that he was still apprehensive, guarded, you know, in his behavior about that. So, you know, we don't know. I mean, was he frustrated? Was Bill Clinton frustrated about not being able to find answers? Was he stonewalled like Barry Goldwater and the other president? Oh, I just drew a blank. He had his own sighting, Jimmy Carter, and he even wrote a report about his sighting many years ago. He was stonewalled as well. So, you know, this is all. I don't know.
Interesting questions. Let's take a couple of calls from our listeners. First time caller Colton in St. Louis. You're on with Yvonne Smith.
Hello.
Hi, Colton.
Hey, I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
I was wondering, like, is there a cluster of UFO sightings?
Is there a cluster of them? Well, sometimes there have been. What are you seeing, a cluster?
Well, the thing is, I've just been wondering, like, how intelligent are the aliens?
Yeah, well, they're pretty smart, Colton. I'll tell you what, we're kind of focusing on abductions. Do you have a question for Yvonne?
Yeah, actually, I did.
About abductions?
Yes. When the aliens abduct people, have you ever had reports of them missing stuff, like aliens taking stuff from them?
Aliens taking stuff.
Like souvenirs or something, huh?
Yeah, like body parts or something.
Oh, no, at this point, no. They come back intact, and they do come back. no, nothing.
Well, samples,
like that.
Biological samples.
Biological samples, yeah, but they do come back intact.
Yeah, they're not harvesting like livers or anything like that. Thanks, Colton. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Welcome to the program. Wildcard Line, Julie in Arizona. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Hey, George. How you doing?
Okay.
And Yvonne, too.
Hi, Julie.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to talk with you. I really enjoyed the show so far. I'm a little nervous, but it's okay. I went to a metaphysical. I was starting getting into metaphysical fairs and psychic, you know, and I was, you know, so I went to one. It was a past life. You know, I went by the booth and she had a crystal and she said, this is for past lives. And so what she proceeded to do was use a crystal on my feet and went around me and told me about, oh, I had a good past life and this life is going to be a little bit tougher. She went around to my throat and I felt something go down my neck from my right ear down. I felt it go down, and it just threw me because it was recorded. And she said, "What was that?" And I said, "Well, no, that's my question. What was that?" And it just went down my neck and off to my shoulder, and I didn't feel anything afterwards. And then her assistant, she was older, and she piped up right away and said, "That's an implant. You just had an implant go down your neck." And so she goes, "Let me come over to your ear, you know, let me go over." She came over to me and she lifted up my, you know, my hair off my ear. And on the top, I have a perforation, which I always wanted to know about that. I always wondered. I've talked to doctors about it and they say, oh, maybe it's a sinus, you know, kind of thing or something. I never got an answer, but I felt as though at least something. So what I'm asking you, Yvonne, have you had anything like this happen? With a perforation, and I distinctly felt, and it was not something soft, you know, globular going through. It was kind of almost rectangular, and had like a little, you know, like I could feel some scratching. Like it was a rectangular and had some edges to it. And I'll leave it at that. And
are you
maybe
still
you can help
feeling?
Me out.
Do you still feel this in your body?
No, and it disappeared. But I remember. Lear used to, he had an implant where it disappeared, where they tried to do surgery, and every time he tried to go in there, it would disappear. They couldn't quite catch it, so that's
why
I'm asking
you.
They do
move. I mean, these implants, they do move. Mm-hmm. We've had some cases where the doctor or the surgeon or, you know, I had a psychic just wanting to go near one of them in someone's body, and the object actually moved a few inches. So it's almost as if they don't want to be detected or touched or, but yes, and there's some indication at times that there was something placed in the person's body, like you talked about, a little puncture mark. We have the scoop marks. You know, years ago, many years ago, we had no idea that some of these scoop marks could have something beneath them, like in the case of Alice, she had a scoop mark in her shin. But many times, which is another mystery, is that there are no indications of an entry wound at all. But these people will have something, an object in their bodies.
Thank you, Julie. Appreciate the call. I can't remember, Yvonne, which of your, it might have been Alice or Lacey, who had some sort of not only a scoop mark or an injury of some sort, but an indication that ultraviolet, an intense ultraviolet light or instrument had been used?
Yes. That was on Alice. That was on Alice. And in the book I described, because I had a long discussion with Roger Lear about Alice's case, and he talked about another patient that he had with the exact same implant and analysis that came forward as with Alice. So she was exposed to some type of a very powerful, bright light.
It's interesting that pops up with different witnesses in separate cases, the same as descriptions of the equipment that these mm-hmm. beings use. It comes back similar again and again, right?
All the time. People that don't know each other, people from different parts of, you know, the United States, say, and but many of these, I have clients that were in another country when this happened, you know, when they were children, and then they came over here. Same description, no matter where they live. So this is a worldwide phenomenon.
Let's go to Ann in Orlando. Good morning, Ann.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Yvonne, it's funny, I was just watched Turner, Miss Turner. Tonight, something drew me to listen to her because I feel like this has happened to me. And I went on a search to find a hypnotherapist that I felt like I could trust. And there you are. And lo and behold, you're on Coast to Coast tonight. My question is, and thank you so much for your endearing quality with the work that you're doing. You're very compassionate. And so that's why I'm calling in. Do you think that they're going beyond taking samples and trying to do imprints of our soul? Do you also think that the military-industrial complex is involved in the sense that they're actually creating these little gray beings to take them in and do tests on us, and the nanoparticulates, the nanoparticle implant that you found? I know for a fact that they're targeting people because I myself have been targeted and had nano worms coming out of my eyes and my face after me doing some work that I guess had been noticed, black helicopters flying over. My family has witnessed this. I woke up with a mark on my wrist about 3 weeks ago. This is all very recent, and excuse me, I'm very nervous because I never... So I feel like I've...
Hey, Ann, let's focus. Let's focus here. Are you okay?
I feel like this has happened to me. But I think it's ongoing, but I think that they're using the nanoparticulates and the nanobots and the chemtrails to target people and also to monitor people that know really what's going on. And I'm sorry that I'm so nervous and emotional,
okay.
But that is where
it's
I'm
okay.
going.
It's very, very normal to be nervous. I hear this all the time, so you're not alone there. I'm not sure about the exact question, but you were talking about do I feel that the military is involved in this?
Yes, and do you think that they're doing more? They're trying to imprint our soul, and they're trying to monitor our functions and those that know what's going on by utilizing the nanotechnology that they're spraying in the air and the nanobots. I mean, this is documented. You can really look this up.
Let's let her respond. Thanks.
Well,
you've given us a lot to chew on there. Thank you.
Yeah,
I hope you're okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I know that people have described what they call them military abductions. They feel that they have seen the people in uniforms, military uniforms, involved in these abductions. Now, I do not think at all that the military, and it's only the military doing these abductions. No, they do not have the capability to do this worldwide. There is some type of alien being engaging us down here. As far as I'm not sure what you said about taking the soul or using us that way. We are definitely being monitored. I mean, I think that's one of the theories of these implants, is that it's a type of tracking device. And also it could be, and I was discussing this with Roger Lear several months before his death, is that it was almost as if it was an imprint of our keeping track of our DNA. I'm not sure exactly what the details are with that, but that was the first I had heard of that. We don't really know exactly what the implants are for and what their exact agenda is. That's the problem with this. We don't know what their agenda is. We just know that they have a job to do and they're doing it. And I believe there's a faction of our government or military that are very interested in what occurs with abductees and what they're being told, what kind of information they are given. So no doubt that people have seen people in military uniforms. However, another thing that muddies the waters, as George, you and I were talking about, is that the aliens could also implant these pictures, these ideas, you know, that they're seeing military there.
Yeah, they can look like a dead relative. I mean, who knows what they really look like?
That's what muddies the water, so we're not really sure. And the important thing is it Anne? You have to be careful with taking in all this information. You have to take a lot of it with a grain of salt, because you could really, really get, you know, it's so confusing and so upsetting, and you have to take it one step at a time. Do you have someone to work with you there in Florida?
I think Anne is already gone, but maybe she could, to send an email to us, we'll forward it to you, Yvonne, and you can help her out or make a suggestion.
Somebody there, yes, absolutely. But her reaction, her emotional reaction, George, I hear this all the time.
Yeah, I recognize it as well. One quick question. We're not going to have time to go back to the phones before the break, but there, you mentioned a lady named Dawn, who's the daughter of a famous rock star. I don't think you've made public the name of the rock star, but she described seeing something like spider people. Different manifestation of the same thing?
No, yes, it's a different description, you know, and she was talking about, and she was talking about spider people, that's what she called them as a child and then growing up, and when, you know, she was drawing these, and she's a professional artist, drawing these spider people, I looked at it, I said, oh, well, that's our typical loving gray that everybody sees, you know, I mean, we know that we have enough information, enough data, similarities in what people describe. You know, those little short little beings that take people out of their environment, take them up to the craft. And then once they get on the craft, they see taller gray beings. Some of them are wearing uniforms. Some of them are wearing capes. And there is a definite chain of command when they get on the craft. The very tall being that is often described as well is the praying mantis type. Sometimes wearing a long cape, but he seems to always be in charge. So we're pretty confident that these descriptions of these beings are what they are. This is what people have described working on them and being on the craft.
All right, Yvonne, we continue our conversation about your new book, Coronado, The President, the Secret Service, and Alien Abductions in a moment. We'll be joined by two other people who were there on that fateful weekend, Melinda Leslie and Jesse Long, and hear their versions of what happened. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.